Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. It's Saturday, January 4th, 2020, the first Saturday in 2020. Doug Kellett, who's usually our co-host, is out today. He'll be back next week. Sitting in with me today is my good friend, the original All-Star panelist on the Tennessee Star Report, which you hear Monday through Friday here on Talk Radio 98.3. Crom Carmichael. Good morning, Crom.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm delighted to be on the air again here talking about the 2020 campaign. Now, on our other program, we had talked a little bit about a game changer. And you pointed out the significance of this change. And as you elaborated on it, I think I came to believe that you're quite right. That the report came that earlier this week on Thursday, the United States military forces in an airstrike killed the leader of the Iranian militia who was in
the Revolutionary Guard.
Yeah, yeah. Who was in?
Who runs their military?
Yeah,
it is their military.
Their military leader.
Yeah,
who was, by the way, had been assigned to go over to Baghdad, Iraq, another country, mm-hmm. and incite the Iranian, basically, led militia to attack the American embassy. The guy's name is Soleimani.
Was.
He's dead as a doornail.
And so is his number two.
Now, you said that this is going to have a real significant change, not only in the international arena, how countries respond to us, but also domestically. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you have what you're seeing here is the Democrats have reflexively come out and said that what Trump has done in having this guy killed is a terrible policy. A terrible policy mistake. Biden has come out and said he's thrown dynamite into a tinderbox. Now, let's remember that Joe Biden was the person who told then President Obama, he advised him not to go after Osama bin Laden when Obama did actually go after Osama bin Laden.
The one time President Obama did the right thing on foreign policy.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, the Democratic frontrunner or leader,
yeah.
now advised him not to do it.
Yeah, he is. Joe Biden is one of the. He is the most consistently wrong person on foreign policy, perhaps in U.S. history. I mean, the guy, whatever it is he says, you know, well, we need to do the other. He supported, I mean, he was...
It's like that Seinfeld episode,
yeah,
right?
I mean, he is just a buffoon when it comes to foreign policy. And he thinks you can give people to money, give money people, and they will then behave the way that they promise, even though these are people who are known to use money to spread terrorism. It's a little bit like I think you said earlier today. Don't give money to a panhandler, because a panhandler generally uses the money to buy drugs or buy alcohol or do something with the cash that hurts them personally. Well, in this case, Biden would give he'd give money to Kim Jong Un rather than sanctions.
Oh yeah,
he'd give money to him. He gave money. He supported the Iranian deal, and so the game changer here is that now people recognize that Trump is very unpredictable.
Yes,
that's a good place for Trump to be.
So, adding to this, the lack of common sense, the lunacy of the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, who's led the impeachment mm-hmm. of President Trump. Because he was a clear and present danger, but is not giving the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. Here's her statement. Okay. From the Hill, Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Thursday said that an airstrike that killed top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was not authorized and Congress was not consulted on the decision. I'm going to read this. It's like four sentences, and then you got to react to this, Crom. Yeah, because you've not heard this yet.
Okay.
Quote, the administration has conducted tonight's strikes in Iraq, targeting high-level Iranian military officials and killing Iranian Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani without an authorization for use of military force against Iran. Further, this action was taken without the consultation of the Congress. She said the move provoked, quote, further dangerous escalation of violence. Quote, we cannot put the lives of American service members, diplomats, and others further at risk by engaging in provocative and disproportionate actions. Tonight's airstrike risk provoking further dangerous escalation of violence. America and the world cannot afford to have tensions escalate to the point of no return. That's Nancy Pelosi.
Well, my reaction is that Pelosi's proving once again that she's a fool. And it's also this Trump derangement syndrome, where Trump's being president destroys any rational thinking on those that are not happy about Trump being president. Because what Pelosi is saying is devoid of it. The Middle East is not a nice place.
No.
And hundreds. This guy that Trump killed. This guy has caused the deaths of hundreds of American servicemen and women, and wants to kill more. Wanted to kill more.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk about the implications of this for domestic politics, particularly in the battleground states. Crom, you're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Crom Carmichael here, back after this.
State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Crom Carmichael sitting in for Doug Kellett. Crom, before the break, we were talking about all the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, saying it's such a bad thing that President Trump killed the leader of the Iranian militia who was in Iraq trying to kill Americans.
It's not the Iranian militia. It's the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. He is the top commander in Iran.
Yeah, he wasn't just militia.
That's correct.
He was the top commander in Iran who was guiding the, quote, militia.
And is responsible for the deaths of thousands of Iranians. Thousands. Tens of thousands of Iranians since 1979. And is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of Americans and the wounding of thousands of Americans. And so if this guy isn't worthy of being killed when he's in Iraq planning another mission against Americans, if Nancy Pelosi thinks that Trump is dumb enough to consult with Nancy Pelosi on something like this, you know, she really has something else coming. And I don't think this is going to play well at all in the battleground states. You know, where the people in Middle America, and that's where the battleground states primarily are. Mm-hmm. Middle America and maybe a couple of southern states. These are rational people. These are not San Francisco people. These are not New York City people. These are not Washington D.C. deep state people. These are rational people, and this guy was a butcher. He was a butcher. He was a bigger threat than the guy that was head of ISIS, al-Baghdadi. And he also sends a message to anyone who would do Americans harm in the Middle East that, you know, once we know who you are, you're on our list. And And Pelosi needs to, what she didn't explain is what this guy was doing in Iraq.
That's exactly my point. I was just going to bring that up. In her entire statement, she makes no mention of the fact that he's not in Iran, he's in Iraq, and he's orchestrating the attack on the American embassy.
Right.
She forgot to mention that.
Right. Well, I'm just going to say, I'm going to take her for her word that she doesn't even understand this. The fact that she omitted it tells you more about her state of mind and her level of intelligence than it does anything else. You have to take these people, you don't have to take them at their word, but in this particular case, she's so critical of this and omits the obvious that the obvious apparently doesn't affect the way she thinks.
Yeah, and we've not seen any polling on this yet, because it's too recent. But it seems to me in the battleground states, and we've identified about 17 of them, that where the outcome of the 2020 presidential election is unknown, up for grabs, shall we say. You know, the leading ones, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Same ones
as before. So, you know, before this happened, and I agree with you, I think this is a significant game changer, both domestically and internationally. Before this happened, polling in the battleground state showed that the support for the impeachment has declined to the point now where it's double-digit disapproval across the board of impeachment. I don't see how this turn of events with the president's decisive protecting American action combined with the whining Neville Chamberlain-like supplication to evil coming from the Democrats and attack on our defender, the president, and our military forces, how is that going to impact the polling in these battleground states?
Well, it's also the position that the leading Democrat candidates are taking. The leading Democrat candidates are essentially saying the same thing that Pelosi. The quotes that you gave of Pelosi. Joe Biden's quotes aren't any different than Pelosi's. And so I'll be interested to see what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Mayor Pete.
Mayor Pete.
I'll be interested to see what he has to say. He might actually take a different tact because he's trying to separate himself and appear to be strong. Because after all, he claims that he's a military veteran.
Well, he was a naval intelligence officer and he did serve in Afghanistan.
I think he was in the reserves and he drove a car for a few months. I'll give him credit for going over there.
Yeah.
But for him to call himself a military veteran and leaving it at that, I think is a bit of an exaggeration. Being a driver is not the same thing as being under fire and being out in the field in danger. So I don't know all of his duties overseas, but. Let me say this. The fact that he served a few months in Afghanistan does not make him a foreign policy expert.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that. I've been looking for comments from Pete Buttigieg on this, and guess what? I can't find any.
Well, he's
probably said something, but I can't find it.
Well, either that or he's gonna really wait until the polls come out and then tell you what he told his advisor
over
a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Tulsi Gabbard, we're looking for what she's saying on this as well. And I'm not getting any comments from her. This would be an opportunity for her to distinguish herself, don't you think?
Yeah. But the Democrats are, you know, they're kind of in lockstep that they have to, anything Trump does, they have to say it's bad. Even when it's good, and by the way, to me that is such bad political strategy. If you have to attack your opponent all the time, even when most of the certainly let's talk about the battleground states, even when they know that most of the voters in the battleground states support the action, I don't see how politically that makes sense. But
Lose credibility.
Yeah, you know, Karl Rove wrote an article in the last couple of 3 days where he is predicting that the Democrats will pick their candidate at the convention.
A brokered convention.
A brokered convention. That's what he is claiming. And I've been saying that as a 50-50 for quite some time, only because nobody seems to be gaining the kind of traction that Trump gained throughout the...
Yeah, if you go back and you look at that, you look at the time, by this time in January of 2016,
right,
Trump was the front runner by a long shot.
Yeah, he was the front runner, and then when people dropped out, he became more the front runner.
Yeah, but you don't see that happening with the Democratic side. You've got, you know, what have you got? You've got the Iowa caucuses now happening less than a month from today, February 3rd.
Yep.
And you know, all of the latest polls on that, if you look at it, put, you know, Pete Buttigieg in the lead, Bernie Sanders doing relatively well, Elizabeth Warren kind of fading a little bit, and Joe Biden sort of in there. So top four, nothing's really changed in Iowa.
Yeah, and then it'll go to New Hampshire, and it'll be more or less those same four. And then it'll go to South Carolina, where it will change.
Yeah,
South Carolina and Nevada, where it will change.
Mm-hmm.
And then it won't be those same. I mean, it may be the same four, but they'll be in a very different order.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll move to Super Tuesday.
Now, when we come back, I want to talk about Super Tuesday and Michael Bloomberg spending more money than anyone has ever spent on a political campaign and still hanging in there at about 5% among Democratic primary voters. Not exactly a good return on your investment if your goal is to become president. We'll talk about that more when we get back. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Crom Carmichael sitting in with me for Doug Kellett. Back after this.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Crom Carmichael sitting in for Doug Kellett today. We're talking before the break about the Michael Bloomberg strategy. Now, there are a lot of things that really irritate me about the political process, Crom. One thing about this particular year that does irritate me is the fact that Michael Bloomberg, who's spending, I don't know, he's already spent like $300 million on this thing. And, you know, he's...
He'll spend a billion.
A billion, easily, yeah.
In the primaries.
Diminishing his net worth by 2%.
Wow.
But he has another objective. He has eschewed, you like that word? Eschewed.
Okay.
He has eschewed the normal route, going to the Iowa caucuses, New Hampshire, even South Carolina. He's not going to be playing until the March 3rd Super Tuesday primary. And here in Tennessee, we're already seeing his advertisements. They are not bad advertisements as you know, political advertisements. You know, they're generic. I would contrast his political ads with Tom Steyer, which are just insufferable.
They're terrible.
I mean...
But he is.
Oh!
I don't think you can take somebody who is as arrogant as Tom Steyer. Mm. And by the way, when you're trying to evaluate Tom Steyer, you have to look at some of his old clips giving speeches against Trump where he's ranting and raving and screaming. And now his political people are trying to say, look, you have to appear calm and you have to appear reasoned. But what they've done is they've taken calm and reasoned equals boring.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going no place. But let me say this, what Steyer and Bloomberg are doing is they're sticking a pin in one of the biggest balloons of the Democrats' political arguments. and that is that money buys politics.
And they're proving it doesn't.
They're proving it doesn't. And so this is going to now be used against them. Trump, by the way, is raising tremendous amounts of money under $100 a donation.
The fourth quarter total, Trump raised $46 million.
Yeah.
Just for the Trump campaign. I'm not even talking about Republican National Committee.
Yes. Yeah.
And on the Democratic side, the surprising frontrunner on the money race in the fourth quarter, Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. who raised $34 million. But to your point, if you look at where that came from, he says most of it came from blue-collar workers and teachers
yeah.
unions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Trump is, and the other thing is that Trump is storing up a large percentage of the money that he's raising.
High cash on hand.
Yeah. And the Democrats, on the other hand, are
spending.
Being forced to spending it.
Yeah.
In the primary battle. And it reminds me a little bit of the Tennessee gubernatorial race,
mm-hmm.
where you had the
Republican
two, Republican primary. You had these two very well financed leaders who believed that if they could knock out the other, that they would then ascend to win the primary. But what they ended up doing was they ended up knocking each other out.
And leaving a path for Bill Lee.
A path for Bill Lee to come in. And Bill Lee, his campaign was extremely well run. He worked really hard.
Mm-hmm.
He traveled the state and mm-hmm. he met people. But and Bill Lee is a genuinely nice man. I mean, a nice man. I think he's a smart guy, too. But from a political standpoint, he let Randy Boyd and Diane
knock
Black
each other out.
Just knock each other out, and
yeah.
then he just took the high road. And then by the time they figured out that they had to knock him out, it was too late.
It was too late. Yeah.
And this is what I think is going to happen in the Democrat primary.
Ah.
I'm saying this is what's going to happen is at some point in here, they're going to have to go at each other harder than they are now.
Because they're not really going after each other.
A little bit.
A little
bit. The wine cave and those kinds of things.
Yeah, but that's a glancing blow.
I'm saying, and none of them are really going after Biden the way that they could.
Nobody is asking him this question, Joe.
Yeah.
Why did you not tell your son to not take the money from Burisma, that $3.5 million?
Well, that's only one of about it.
There's about 20 of them.
There are about 20 questions that they could go after Biden. And at some point they will. At some point it will narrow down because all of the here's what's happening. All of the people who are running who are not named Biden think that Biden will fade.
Yes.
And so they want to not offend the Biden voters.
Because when he withdraws,
yes.
they want to get the
they
Biden
want to
voters.
Get those votes.
Yeah.
Well, if he keeps plopping along here at 25 or 30%, at some point they have to get him out of the race, and mm-hmm. so and nobody wants to be the attack dog who chases him out of the race. But he won't. I just can't imagine that Biden will prevail, which is what Karl Rove is saying. Now you get back to Bloomberg. He'll spend $1 billion in the primary trying to win the primary from his couch. Now think about this for a second.
Now look, there's nothing wrong with that. No, it's not his couch though. It did you see this? How
it's
he's going to
yacht?
Run?
Maybe it's his yacht. where is Bloomberg?
So what he's doing
is
he made a big deal about this.
Okay.
He's got a moving to a new campaign headquarters, the old New York Times building.
Okay.
Right? And it's like a big, big cavernous room. And he's an open office guy. And so like the desk in the middle of this, like there's like hundreds of desks. And the desk in the middle of this is his. That's where he's going to be sitting at that desk with like a big cavern.
Okay.
And 100 people around him. And he's going to be like, you know, looking around over at the edge of the room. All right, you do that commercial. And the other edge, okay, California, you do that commercial.
Okay, so all right, so couch, chair, you know, take your pick.
Yeah.
If he thinks he can win the election that way, he truly does not understand the American people. Now, he won the New York mayor's race by just spending hundreds of millions of dollars
mm-hmm.
for one city.
Yeah.
for one city. So yeah. so you know, it's
I got a great slogan for Donald Trump with regards to Mike Bloomberg. You want to hear what it is?
Yeah.
Make him spend it all.
Well, yeah. Well, here's you remember when all those little the heads of state were over there having their little wine and cheese, and they were picking on Trump, mm-hmm. Even while Trump was making them do things that they didn't want to do. I'll bet you that all the political campaign consultants, mm-hmm. when they talk amongst themselves, they're all sitting there saying, God, what? How can I get on that Bloomberg staff? How can I get on? I can make a couple of $1 million and he won't even notice.
Yeah.
And I mean, they'll all be laughing at Bloomberg.
Right.
They'll all be laughing at him as they talk amongst themselves.
You know, he's running here in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We'll take his money if he wants to add with us.
Sure. I'm just saying that's.
Now, I could make an argument. It wouldn't be a very accurate argument, but I could say, well, you know, just our listeners are, you know, you could tell them to stop being Republicans and go, you know, do a little Operation Chaos.
Well, I look at what Bloomberg's doing.
Yeah.
And I'm actually pleased he's in there spending this kind of money.
Yes.
Because what it does is it just puts a pin right in the balloon that you can buy your way to office.
So I got two questions for you. Number one, do you really think he wants to be president, or do you think he's just mounting a campaign to beat Donald Trump and using it? This is an excuse to spend his money to beat Donald Trump.
I would say that his primary reason for doing this is he hates Trump. He hates him. This has nothing
with
to do
with passion.
This has nothing to do with politics. This is personal.
Yeah.
He hates him. And so that's his primary objective. Would he like to be president? Perhaps. But if he's not president but can defeat Trump, he will have achieved his primary objective.
If he's not president and he spends $2 billion to be president, he still has a net worth of $48 billion.
Yeah, and so, yeah, he's not hurting. But he also is not going to be defeating Trump.
No, not at all. When we come back, we're going to take a little look at predictions on these primaries that are coming up. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy, talking with Crom Carmichael, back with the Battleground State Report after this.
Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
So, back with the Battleground State Report, Michael Patrick Leahy here, sitting in for Doug Kellett, Crom Carmichael, good friend, all-star panelist on the Tennessee Star Report. And, Crom, you and I have been talking politics together for about 30 years.
Yeah.
I think it's been a long time. And you know, we've been right all the time, and just we haven't. Well, we'll take another shot at some predictions.
Sure.
Guesses. I mean, I don't even want to say that's a prediction. But we've got the Iowa Democratic Caucus is coming up, and then we've got New Hampshire primary a week after that. And then I'll just jump forward to Super Tuesday, March 3rd, and we'll focus a little bit on Tennessee. And this is something we don't really know that much about, or I don't know, how Democratic primary voters are actually going to behave. I've got a good sense. We do a lot of polling at the Tennessee Star of Republican primary voters, and we've done some general polls in Tennessee. But let's come back to Iowa. Do you have any sense of how it's the caucus night, February 3rd, and all of the results have come in? How do you think they're going to finish? 1, 2, 3, 4?
Well,
what do you think?
I think you'll be able to throw a hat over the top four.
I think the top and the bottom
they'll be within 7 points of each other.
Yeah, and it will be. I would probably guess it will be number one, Pete Buttigieg. I would say number one, Pete Buttigieg, number two, Bernie Sanders, number three, Joe Biden, number four, Elizabeth Warren. But but two through four could easily change.
Yeah.
That's a guess.
Yeah.
It's not a prediction.
And Pete Buttigieg winning Iowa is not a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't. It's a nice feather in his hat. Then they'll move to New Hampshire.
So then what happens in New Hampshire? By the way, just this is
probably something fairly similar.
Apropos of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but I'm gonna probably something similar.
I got to add this.
Okay.
This is just kind of interesting. It's going to have no impact on anything. But did you see the story where Tulsi Gabbard? See, Tulsi Gabbard is from Hawaii, military background, and she's a surfer in Hawaii. And a couple days ago, there's a group in New Hampshire that I think on the New Year's Day, they go out into the ocean and surf.
Okay.
She was in that crowd.
Wow.
That was the biggest news she's ever made.
That was impressive. That was impressive.
So yeah. It's I don't think it's going to get her a single vote in New Hampshire.
No, but.
But, you know, she.
And I don't think New Hampshire matters much.
I agree.
And then they go to.
South Carolina.
And Nevada. Aren't they both on the same day?
I think they are. And, you know, South Carolina, Pete Buttigieg is not going to do well because 65% of the voters there are black. And his support in the black community is virtually nil.
It is virtually nothing. And that's because of his record in South Bend as mayor.
Yeah.
The black community in South Bend does not like him at all.
Yeah,
and
there are phones from South Bend to South Carolina.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you know,
they know.
And then the labor movement. Buttigieg is trying to position himself. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
All the Democrats want to do away with right to work in 27 states.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
Tennessee's a right to work.
Tennessee is a lot. And by the way, the right to work states in general economically do a lot better,
right,
than the non right to work states.
And for our listening audience, explain what it means, right to work.
Well, it means you don't have to be a member of a union if you don't want to be a member of a union.
I love that.
And but in the other states. If you go to work for a place that has a union, you must join the union and you must pay the dues.
Yeah. So it gives them political power.
That is my understanding of a right-to-work state.
Mine too. And right-to-work states, as you point out, do much better economically.
Yeah. They do better economically and they don't run the big deficits and all that kind of stuff. But at any rate, so Buttigieg is trying to be out there. But since everybody else is taking the same position, it doesn't change. It doesn't help him in the labor union. Where the labor unions matter. And so I don't think Buttigieg fares well after the first two primaries. And then it kind of becomes almost a slog. And then they'll have these debates and all these other things. I think the Senate the impeachment in the Senate, I'm sticking with my prediction that at some point McConnell will get the Republicans to vote on setting a date for the impeachment trial to begin and asserting that the rules for 1998 will be the same rules that apply to this impeachment because those rules were passed 100-0 for the 1998. And so then it'll be interesting to see what the senators who are running for president, and you've got three that are in the top six. I think there are three. You got Warren, you got Sanders, and you got Klobuchar.
Right.
Who are in the top six. Then you have Cory Booker.
Who's in
the top eight.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And then there may be another senator. I can't
Bennett,
remember.
Michael Bennett. He's like at number 14.
Is he still in it?
I think he is.
Okay. All right. Then
he's number 14.
All right. So now then they will have to come off the campaign trail. And if Schumer doesn't like the rules and calls for a boycott, it'll be interesting to see what they do. So the impeachment Senate episode, debacle, circus, whatever you want to call it, it will play out sometime between now and the middle of February. The longer it goes, the weaker Pelosi's argument is that Trump is an existential threat to our very democracy. And yet I'm going to withhold the articles.
By the way, I just checked. Michael Bennett, senator from Colorado, the guy who talks like he's got marbles in his mouth,
right.
That guy, still in the race. He has introduced something called the $6 billion real deal. I have no idea what that is.
Well, Castro dropped out. Yeah. And so now I think is there only one, quote, person of color left in the race?
Cory. Yeah,
Cory Booker. Is he the last one?
I think so. Yeah.
And I think the people who are, you know, the commentators, you know, it wasn't long ago that Castro was, he gave a speech, I think at the, was either 2012 or 2016, Democrat convention, and I mean he was hailed as one of the great stars of the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now dropped out, and so the Democrat Party, you know, by the way that they judge things, you just have to question whether or not the Democrat Party is a bunch of racists. I mean, by their standards,
yeah,
the way that they say things is if you're critical or don't support a person of color, then you are by definition a racist. Well, if you drop out of the Democratic primary, you can't yell at the Republicans when your own party won't support you. So you have to question.
Well,
them.
And Cory Booker, I mean,
I have my tongue in my cheek there, but
I don't know why. I have no idea why Cory Booker is other than ego. Why he's continuing to run. I mean, you know, Castro drops
Spartacus
out.
Did not, Spartacus, he didn't quit.
Yeah.
Let's remember. He did, Spartacus did not quit.
Didn't end so well
didn't
for him.
Didn't end so well for him.
Crom, so let's just, you know, throw it out there and talk about Tennessee Democratic primary, March 3rd, Super Tuesday. We have all this money being spent on TV ads by Michael Bloomberg. He was here. He came here. He came here like a couple weeks ago, and this Justin Jones character was there protesting him and was thrown out, and it's just kind of funny. But how do you – have you any idea how the Democratic primary –
Well, let me ask a couple of questions just so I can be sure that when I make a statement, I understand a few things.
Yeah.
The Democrat primary and the Republican primary are held on the same day. Is that right?
I think so,
okay.
Yeah.
And is there anything else other than the primary? What else is – are there
– Nothing else on the ballot that
I
know of.
But I mean, like, for example – the Senate, Republican Senate race.
Is it August?
Isn't that the primary?
August.
Oh, no. It's in August.
Yeah,
You're right.
It's August.
So this is Super Tuesday. So it's just
presidential.
Just presidential.
Yeah.
I think the turnout will be abysmal.
Microscopic.
I think it will be tiny.
So the people that are watching these Michael Bloomberg ads are going to say, they're not gonna like get up and say, "I gotta vote for this guy."
Let me say that this is interesting. There were 30 million people who voted in the Democrat primary in 2016.
Right.
Okay.
Across the country.
Across the country,
yeah.
30 million. In the general election, Hillary Clinton ended up with like 65 million votes.
Right. Right.
Okay. So that gives you a ratio.
Right.
Now, if half as many people vote in the primary as vote in the general,
mm-hmm.
as a general rule,
mm-hmm.
if the vote in the primary is microscopic, it shows that the enthusiasm for the whoever the Democrat winner ultimately is,
mm-hmm.
it shows that the enthusiasm is next to nothing.
Yeah,
I'm saying so it'll be the primary. I don't know who wins. What I'm going to be watching for more than anything else is how many people vote in the Democrat primary,
mm-hmm.
versus how many people voted in Tennessee for Hillary Clinton in the last election.
See, I think the makeup of the Democratic primary voter,
mm-hmm.
is more far left. Mm-hmm. Than the general populace here in Tennessee.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, very far left.
That's true nationally.
Yeah, but particularly here because you'll have a heavy turnout in Nashville and in Memphis.
See, I'm not even sure. What I'm saying is
heavier.
Well,
okay.
We'll see.
Heavier
than what?
Yeah.
So I think the primary vote this year will be lower than it was 4 years ago. Let me say that.
So
we'll find out. That's
my
that's the point of comparison.
My guess is Bloomberg will get maybe 10%.
Okay.
Okay. And I think the winner here will be either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
In Tennessee.
Okay.
That's what I think.
All right.
But it's a guess.
Well.
Because the primary is going to be of this, you know, far left crowd.
Yeah. Well, what I'll be interested to look at is the turnout for the primary this time versus the turnout for the primary 4 years ago. Because Trump will be running unopposed on the ballot.
Right.
So there'll be no, the Republicans, there'll be some who turn out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go vote. But
because we vote,
just
because
we vote,
yeah.
But it'll be a low turnout, and that's because it doesn't matter. I mean, this primary for the Republican side doesn't matter because it's only one person. But on the Democrat side, if the turnout is really low, that is indicative of a lack of enthusiasm.
Yeah, which I think may be the case. Crom, it's great having you here on Battleground State Report. I really appreciate it. And next week, Doug Kellett will join us. And meanwhile, we'll be back with the Tennessee Star Report on Monday, 5 a.m. to 8. Make sure you tune in then. And I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.